Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy. What better breeding ground is there?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefrey, and this is episode number 254. I want to thank you guys for listening each week. Really appreciate those of you that like, share, comment. It just helps us continue to highlight the great people in our profession. Also want to thank our sponsors, specifically Woodway, for bringing this episode to you for free. I only partner with companies that I believe in, products that I believe in, and Woodway by far is the best treadmill out there. And just they got the best product and they're great people. So if you're in the market, make sure you reach out to them. If you're not, next time you see them, just let them know how much you appreciate them being a part of the show. I'd appreciate that. This week, I'm joined by a buddy of mine, Chris Laskowski. He's the head strength coach at Austin Peay University. If you can follow them at all, you're probably just as amazed as I am to see the turnaround that these guys have had. And Chris is a huge part of that. So, man, I appreciate you coming on the show, brother.
It's an absolute honor. And we were talking before, getting into this field, into the college realm specifically about 3 years ago, kind of getting a crash course, listening to the legends in this field with your podcast has been huge for me. So it's an absolute honor and pleasure.
Thanks, man. Well, you mentioned that a little bit. I mean, you got in about 3 years ago. You have a little bit of a unique journey kind of into the profession, but you've been Old Dominion, Virginia, FAU as a player, played in the league. Rockledge High School. I think your dad was a coach there, right? If I'm not mistaken.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So you've been around sport your whole life, but what out of all those experiences, which one do you think best defines the person you are today, the strength coach that you are today? Where did you really feel like you grew up as a strength coach?
And specifically as a strength coach, to me, taking over a high school, really just giving the reins. After not really having a lot of formal education in this realm and formal experience in this realm, and having to, really learn as I go, rely a lot on my mentor during those years of my life. And it was part of my journey. So, at that time, I'm teaching six periods a day, world history, American government. I'm an offensive coordinator of a high school football team. I'm, planning the high school wrestling off-season programs and assistant coach for the wrestling team, and as well as the year-round coordinator of our performance, of our strength and conditioning. And there's a few guys there that had been there for when I went back and coached my alma mater high school. These guys have been there for 20 years together. My dad was one of them, and they all kind of carouseled the head coaching position, which was very unique. So. Chuck Wood was a guy who's a legend in the state of Florida, for 20 years, won back-to-back state championships in Florida, and he was the guy I played for. And then Pat Lusk was a defensive coordinator that ran the offseason program with my father. And so I learned, at the bare bones in high school from those guys. And then going back and coaching with them and them saying, hey, you've had the experience. You've done your own research in this realm. We trust you. We want to see what happens. You're our leader. So it's a 27-year-old guy with 50 plus vets that you honor and respect. And so, learning real quick, had to humble myself and ask them and learn from them at the same time, not sacrificing my integrity of, what I think is going to be good for these 14, 15, 16 year old kids. So really skin of my teeth there. You learn quickly that, you're teaching again, 40 kids on the floor at one time. You can really be detailed with a deadlift if you got one-on-one clientele, and that's kind of the realm that I went to. Right. When I was playing the NFL for 3 years in and out, I was reaching out to private guys and learning a ton from them, and it was like one-on-one shop, and the amount of detail you can get right there, trying not to lose that integrity, but then realizing, hey, you got high school age kids in this generation that you need to keep their attention, and you got an hour and a half to do it. So. So I would say that experience, it was very unusual, and I kind of went into my bubble for the better part of 5 to 6 years, and just really relied on my previous knowledge and my mentors to help guide me along the way. And then, and then, you know, jumping into college, like I said, 2014, 15, open up that realm. Like I said, it was huge just to listen to, Mickey Marotti and Ken Manny and the legends of this field, man. It was like, okay, this is what's been happening since I've been, out of the college realm.
Sure.
It's been awesome.
Yeah, man, I think anytime you grow up around the game, you have, it's like that 10,000 hour rule, right? You've been around it for so long, you've been around coaching so long, that kind of permeates through you, regardless of your age. It's so much of an apprenticeship type of profession that, those hours of being an athlete, being coached around, being around good coaches, obviously it oozed into you and that turned around and oozes out to your athletes now today. But I believe that wholeheartedly that it is an on the job type of profession. You don't get to be the head strength coach, at Austin Peay or be in this field for, at the college level for 3 years without making some mistakes along the way. Hmm. What's one of the biggest mistakes you've made and kind of how you've learned from it?
Yeah. So, and I think going back to that realm, the amount of detail, my experience really adding to that puzzle, being having an opportunity to play some football in the National Football League, that professional level, and then having the one-on-one experience with really good, strength coaches, but they've found a niche in the private sector. One of the guys, Donald Raymond is his name, and he's pretty much LeBron James, personal strength coach. He was one of the guys that I met down in Miami when I was down, still training in and out of the NFL. And that level of detail that you can get with that one-on-one interaction is kind of intoxicating. And so, trying to be too detailed, too fast with too many things, right? Trying to, this is the lesson plan today, so to speak. And I still think in those realms here, and even in the university setting, this is what we're trying to accomplish. Here's our tier 1, 2, 3, 4, and this is what we want to do. We're going to be on the field first, and the sudden change, and all these things going on. It's like trying to put too much into the learning cycle at one point in time, when really, you have to be real, and I learned this, you have to be real scientific with what you want to teach, and you put that in the front end and then do some things they're comfortable with to keep them engaged towards the end. Because it's just, I have confidence in my ability to keep a room, but it just takes that one day we don't get great night's sleep the night before, you're not feeling as on and your communication is not as smooth, and you're wondering what the heck's going on, if you plan lightly. And then you can add a couple things and communicate with your staff. Hey, I might do this at the end, keep on tabs for that. So just trying to piece too much together in one sitting. I think those are, and I'm still, how it is. I mean, we're still making those mistakes and learning as we go, right?
Every single day. when you talk about going into a program like Austin Peay, I mean, historically hadn't been a winning program. Maybe the resources weren't quite there or still not quite there. I know you just got a new room not too long ago. But early on it was a lot to be desired probably. How did you, talk a little bit about, first coming into an environment like that and trying to change a culture?
No doubt. So, and I learned this in high school too. This was a difficult lesson to learn. I thought that I was going to be going back in my alma mater high school that had started to lose some athletes that we trained, in the community level. We were losing the athletes to the high schools that are open in suburbia that have a little more money. We're kind of, Rockledge is a little more of a kind of an inner city school, and thinking I was going to be able to go back and inspire, this change and bring the kids back into the high school. And I realized that my position is only as powerful as the people that support the position, whether from a monetarily standpoint or the administration standpoint. So, if the principal and the athletic director, or the grand master, if you're private, and the head football coach, if we're all on the same page about where we're going, man, the sky's the limit. But if there's one chink in that armor, and I think you're just, what happened to me, I was really close to burnout for a little while there, just spinning my wheels. So to me, what attracted me to Austin Peay State University and not taking a position at Virginia at the time with who now Frank at UCLA, that I was really excited about the direction they were going and what they're doing, was an athletic director and head football coach that were just on fire, and a president that in the same context, you know, was tired of losing. And so kind of a reform attitude is what I felt. You know, we're going to change the tide here. We'll get this thing going. We're going to make this the premier athletics department in the Ohio Valley Conference. And we need football to do it. So, you know, there's obviously been hurdles along the way. But, you know, feeling that vigor and that passion, you know, coming from a person, Will Healy, that I 100% believe in and trust. You know, we've been together now for 2 years, and Ryan Ivey, our athletics director, again, he says it all the time. If you're at Austin Peay State University and you are planning on, you know, retiring at Austin Peay State University, then we're probably not going to be on the same page. Not there's anything wrong with that. It's just in the competitive athletic realm, Division I athletics, you know, I want you to have bigger goals and bigger dreams. And if you happen to be in Clarksville for 30 years and this is your path, and great, but if you're not looking at the next possibility, you know, then you're probably not on the same page. So that kind of language inspired me, and you know, and I'll plug again Howard Schnellenberger, my head football coach at FAU. I walked on to FAU in 2000 instead of taking a walk on opportunity at UCF or FSU or in taking some Division II offers that were out of state, because starting something was exciting, you know. And so that, what we did there, you know, 01 to 04 at FAU was pretty special. And being a part of something that was similar to that here, where we're going to reinvigorate a program, it was just what I needed at this stage of my life, and that kind of challenge. So, you know, the culture change began before I got here. I was more or less, you know, the head football coach said, look, I need somebody to run this thing year round. And you know, he'd heard, you know, about me through some of his mentors at Old Dominion when I was there, and we've just kind of hit it off and hit it running, man. You know, the kids have done a huge job too, right? The culture change really is the athletes, and they're hungry for success. I'm going to plug Malik Boynton too. Malik Boynton just accepted an invitation to rookie minicamp at Pittsburgh. We trained him for the past, you know, 14 weeks, first pro day, and he was one of the integral seniors that had lost 2 years of straight, you know, 0 for games, right? And then his junior year, he goes 0 for 11 again. And he was one of the seniors that helped turn this thing around. So he was one of the guys that made this off season, the summer, you know, the spring semester, the OTAs, the optional speed sessions on Saturday. He made, and the kids that as well with him, made it intrigued, because they're tired of losing, tired of getting beat. And so, you know, trying to empower those guys to take it and run with it and say, man, this, you know, you got – really, it's in your hands. I'm gonna help, you know. I'm gonna help you steer the ship, but you're freaking driving it. You know, I'll guide you along the way, right? We've talked about, but you're driving, and let me empower you along the way. So I can't say enough about, you know, those kids and what they've done as well.
Yeah, I always talk about, you know, you can go to places that to test your, you know, as a strength coach, anybody can coach the kids that want to work out. Anybody can coach kids that are winning. Anybody can coach the strong kid, you know, the dedicated kid or whatever, but it takes special coaches to go into situations when, you know, it looks bleak, the standard's not the norm, and all those types of things, and really truly affect change. And ultimately, that's what we're in this business to do. We're in the, you know, if you ask any strength coach, what do they want to do? They say they want to impact young people. Well, if you're at a place where everything comes easy, you're not impacting anybody, you know? So I think so many times as strength coaches, we look for that. I mean, I love the fact that they're, you know, they're saying, you know, this is not the, there's a bigger sea out there and all those types of things. We want to all strive for greatness and all that, but there's another thing to be said for making the big time where you're at and just
Amen.
Everything of yourself into a place. And if you do that, then the people, you know, the big time finds you, and you have to, you know, and then it becomes a situation where, you know, for you to leave, it has to be something great. It has to be a no-brainer. Sometimes you leave when it's not a no-brainer, only to find that the grass isn't greener.
No doubt.
So I love that about your story. When you got there, I mean, I would imagine that, you know, organizing the program, you know, it's the old adage, like the old strength coach didn't know what they were doing, right? So that's, we never want to be like that, but you had to implement your own system, culture, way of doing things. Talk a little bit about like what that program looks like, you know, from a weekly, daily, monthly type of standpoint.
Sure. Yeah, I want to be, and I appreciate you, you know, emphasizing that. And I think Ryan Horn put something on Instagram or Twitter a while back, a week ago or so, about that. Like, you're going to be the former strength coach at some point in your life as well.
Yeah. You know,
and to respect and value everything that's done. I mean, there's reasons why things are done a certain way. Everybody's got their motives and their reasons. So, you know, the resources here weren't, you know, weren't at the level they needed to be. And I was fortunate enough to be brought into a situation where, hey, here's 10,000 square feet of gravel rock that we want you to complete this. You got 6 months, ready to go. And so that was intriguing in and of itself. And so now all of a sudden, the year before, you go to having one 2,500 square foot facility for the entire department to now I got my full off season, my first full off season with two full facilities, one 7,000 with a 3,000 training room addition, and the other one's 2,500. All of a sudden, we're fast forward to another level. So that in and of itself has had such a difference with what we do. And one of the things, and I think, you know, my philosophy has shaped so much of from the sports that I've played, you know, being a multi-sport athlete and then playing football, you know, for a long period of time, and always thinking maybe I was going to be a ball coach, and kind of taking that realm early on, you know, after I got through playing and things like that. And then my body shut down on me, which kind of, you know, lent me into asking questions about why and trying to find answers, which, you know, led me into my obsessive study of the human body and sports performance and strength conditioning in and of itself. And so it spiraled me into this field. And so my experience with standing, I'm a quality movement guy. If that makes, you know, an ounce of sense in the realm of taking bits and pieces of every philosophy, so to speak. And I mean, we had our first intern class this year, and I wrote down, you know, high intent, you know, taking a chapter out of your first, I don't know if it was the first chapter, but one of the chapters where we talk about, I don't know how you say his last name, is it Asanovich?
Yeah, Asanovich, yeah.
Right. Where you're conversing between the high intensity philosophy and the Olympic philosophy. You know, so, you know, you got the Olympic, you got the power lift, you got, you know, high intensity, you got, you know, and I put bodybuilding on there, and I put movement, and I put functional and speed power. You know, I think we're all in this age, we're all taking, you know, bits and pieces of a lot of different things. But I think my wheelhouse is being on the grass, you know, working speed, doing long extended flex periods that I know in my heart, if we sell it and we believe in it every day, you know, that we're going to get better at those specific movements. We're always assessing. We're always watching. You know, it's going to take 18 to 22 minutes, depending on how these kids are ready to go. We'll have to start it over a little bit. But we're doing so much GPP every day on the field first. I'm wheelhouse there. And then, so I guess as to communicate maybe a week, you know, microcycle, so to speak. And I got this from working with the guys at University of Virginia. Kevin Heiberger spent some time with Lawrence Seagrave down at IMG, and he's kind of Frank's right-hand man. And I got kind of a 6-day outline of a week, and it mirrors a football season where you're going to play on Saturday. And so whether you're going to have Sunday off, you know, whatever your plan is, but we would plan on having Sunday off. And so Monday is not like your peak output day yet. Monday is, you know, regen, you know, flex, extended flex period, force hydrate. And then we're going to do our first lower body day of the week. And we're going to be on a 4-day weight room split. We're going to go lower Monday and Thursday, and we're going to go upper, you know, Wednesday and Friday. And I'm going to see my week based on these three big speed sessions of the week. So Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. I'm going to steal another speed session in on Saturday morning and sell it to the leaders on the team and say, hey, we're going to get an extra day of work in when most guys are not. They're going out and partying Friday night. We're going to come Saturday morning. It's optional. Obviously, it has to be in the 8-hour week. But we're going to get another, you know, pure alactic, you know, high intensity speed session on a Saturday. So we're working acceleration. We got our plyos on the field with our med balls and things like that, that progress and scale, dependent upon, you know, the cycle of season you're in. But it was kind of a weird way to look at the week that I'd never heard of. And I tried it when I first got here the first summer, the kids loved it. And when I had an opportunity to last, you know, off season starting in January, you know, to mirror that as much as I could and then do it again in the summer. I mean, you know, input from the kids and the coaches and what it also allows us to do, coaches, is have the coaches be involved in the OTAs a lot more. So I program, you know, the volume of the week around, you know, the individual work the coaches are going to work on the field without a football. And the coaches will invite them to do a 7-on-7 or a team. So Tuesday, Thursday, Saturdays are kind of our days that we can add those in. And again, program that intelligently so the load's not too high on these kids and we're still, you know, progressing them to training camp in an off season. So hope that makes a little bit of sense. But again, I was a guy that said, "Hey, fellas, we're gonna have our cleats on every day. We're gonna be on the grass. We're gonna have a change of direction flex and a linear speed flex. We're gonna learn these. We're gonna detail them. We're gonna be on cadence. We're gonna be disciplined with it. And it has a great benefit for you, you know, from an injury prevention standpoint, if you perfect these movements along the way, and alter it a little bit, bring some spice in there. But, you know, you go from transit to ground based but again, we're on our cleats, we're moving, we're training speed, and then we're going to come max effort in the weight room. So right. Instead of progressing a clean, which I was never great at, I was always allowed to starfish and strap it up and just be a guy that could host up weight and think I was doing something. And you know, and I broke down. So to me, you know, we're going clean. We have pockets of year that we're gonna work the clean pattern, but it's not our main total body explosive movement. The main total body explosive movement is compete. And I took this page out of your book, and Frank does this too. I'm sure he got it from you. Was having our top eight speed lines in the off season. I mean, if you put eight guys that are near the same speed, and you say we're gonna track every rep, I mean, how do you get? And you're going to run 10 yards, 15 yards, 20 yards, unique starts. I mean, I don't know how you get more output out of a kid that's competitive in this age demographic. So that was the first offseason we did it this year with that, and it was awesome. You know. And so then we come inside and we squat or we deadlift or whatever the lower body movement is that week. And we come inside about our tempo work, which is our conditioning days or Wednesday and Friday, and we'll do our upper body work. You know. But it's on the field first, you know, and so the realm – of communication around the locker room with the kids are saying, "Hey, we were really strong before, you know." And I think the guy Nick Hansa did a great job, with everything that he's done that I've heard. These kids were strong, you know. They were very powerful, but I think the field element and having the weight room close to the field like we are now, the quick change, we can go to the grass to the weight room. That just wasn't afforded to them before. I was trying to do it, and the kids were actually on the field first, and then we had an 800-yard walk to the weight room, and I was trying to, you know, pick and choose where I were going to give them nutrition, and so that was a lot more challenging than obviously having it, you know, you open our garage outside of our play turf, and we go down and we go outside of the field, and the interchange is really seamless from that standpoint. So,
yeah, absolutely. You know, you mentioned earlier with the. You walked in, you got a brand new 10,000 square foot weight room now, or 7,000 square foot weight room, whatever it is. You know, and you've seen some success now with the team on the field. You know, how do you, I know when I've been in those situations, I went from similar situations, South Florida, we went to a brand new weight room. You know, Tennessee, same thing, Eastern Michigan, you know, we saw success. How do you protect against them forgetting where they came from? Forgetting from, you know, remembering that, you know, this is not a right, it's a privilege.
Man, that's been the puzzle these past 5 months, really. You know, we go 8-4, and we play that extra game with UCF that was a late game for us. So we get 12 games in the year, and we miss out in the playoffs. The only FCS game we lose is Jacksonville State, and they didn't, you know. They didn't benefit us at all losing to Kennesaw in the second round last year. But we thought we had a legitimate, you know, we thought we were in, you know, and we got snubbed. So that has lent itself to significant motivation. But the risk and the conversations I've had with Brandon Cooper, our DC, and Wes Satterfield, OC, and Josh Rogel, our co-OC, offensive line, and our head coach, Will Healy, throughout this entire season is how do we guard against that complacency? Because, you know, and Will's been great about this, is I don't want these kids to remember, or I don't want these kids to get used to losing, right? But we need to still remember where we came from. So how do we balance that? And man, it's been, you know, the first thing was having a more difficult winter than we did the year before.
Right.
And we moved spring ball back a little bit this year, or forward a little bit, because we had a bunch of staff turnover. So that was a little more challenging on our off season. But we've been showing these guys it's got to be a better off season than the year before. And every once in a while, piecing in, hey, how many guys are from that 0-11, you know, 2016 team? And there ain't many left, you know, but there's some. Can you not completely lose sight of that? Can you remember how that stung, you know, and how embarrassing that was for you, if that's what motivates you? And then the guys that weren't here during that time, you know, hey, we got snubbed last year, you know, and if walking the weight room every day, we got the TV screens on the last two teams that were out of the playoffs, which was the first one was Austin Peay last year, and trying to ignite that. But man, it's been a challenge. And if you got any words of wisdom, I'm all ears. But it's been a dance, because there has been some of that. Like we bring some really high impact junior college guys, you know, in January, and all they know is Austin Peay almost made the playoffs. They're 8-4, and we got nice facilities, and that's all they know. So just you know, bringing that blue collar back, like look, everybody's got to bring their hard hat and their lunch pail. We got to do what we did before, but better. And tapping into what that felt like when we lost. But then Will's like, well, let's be careful, because I want them to ride the enthusiasm of winning too. So,
right.
Man, it's been a dance. It's been a dance.
Yeah, it is. It's a constant challenge. I mean, I think the best piece of advice there is you've got to get the older players to own the standard.
Mm.
You know, they've got to own the standard, because they're the ones that understand that without that standard, that was a negative part of it. You know, that leads to losses and bad experience. You know, and as long as they do that and they'll speak that language off the field as well as on the field and in the weight room, then that starts to become the team standard and passed down from year to year and year. But if those guys, they get complacent and they start to kind of just expect things, you know, right. You know, without being reminded that, hey, you didn't have shakes before. You didn't have
– sure.
You had to work out, you know, at 9 o'clock at night because that was the only time we could get you in or whatever. A lot of times that becomes the case. But that's been great. We end the show with some resources here. Give us the best piece of coaching advice you ever received.
Yeah, so you can't give what you don't have. That was you know, and it was directly to me in a couple different scenarios, but initially it was just through a book and through people that I've learned from. You know, I had a private sphere experience that was fairly vast. You know, the Gary Grays and the Gray Cooks, and then I had spent some time with Paul Cech back in the mid to late 2000s. You know, he wrote a book that really impacted me, and you know, he says that often, you can't give what you don't have, and I've kind of revised that a little bit. And look, I don't have the ability right now to squat and press like these guys are squatting and pressing, but I've certainly felt it in the past. Yeah. Many cycles, many training cycles. I still do all the movements that the guys do. I practice everything so I can demonstrate. And if I'm one-on-one with a guy, I'll jump in to make it spicy. You know, a couple guys have class conflicts. If you can't do that, I think, and you've spoke about this quite a bit, I think you're at a disadvantage in whatever sport or endeavor you're trying to coach these athletes to do. And so, you know, anyway, I embody your craft, you know, and live it and breathe it and feel it. And it kind of emanates out of you is what he's taught me.
I agree 100%. He gave me a bunch of books, apps, and websites, but give me maybe your top book, app, and website recommendation.
Right on. And I'll just go with the book, and I'm going to go to, and I'm going to go spiritual first. And Wild at Heart was a book
yeah.
that impacted me greatly back when I was with the Colts. And I put also quiet strength, but that was just Tony Dungy's influence on me as a human being, being around that organization for the better part of 2 years. But those, you know, those books, especially Wild at Heart, and especially at this age that I coach and teach, I've bought multiple copies and lent it out and never, you know, I never get it back. And I'm good with that because I think that it, people right. need it more than I do at that point in time. But learning how to harness that wildness, but still be a, you know, a strong man of faith and virtue, you know, in this world and navigating that, you know, yeah. John Eldridge talked a lot about being kind of the overrun of like the meek man or the mild and meek man in the some of the modern day evangelical chapters of Christianity that have developed where, you know, we still need to have that courageous spirit and think about, you know, the example of Christ overturning the tables and pews in the synagogue. I mean, he was a courageous man with great spirit, and we can learn from him as well as the kindness and the peaceful, loving heart that he certainly taught us all. So it was huge for me to be able to balance that, because I was having a difficult time, man. I was a wild dude, and you know, Tony Dungy rocked my world. He didn't yell, and he taught. He's like, wow, this is intense. Let me learn the balance here. And then Paul Tech's How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy was instrumental for me in 2004. Yeah. I think it's a fantastic book.
Yeah, man, that's a great resource. And Coach Dungy's one of the all-time best. Got a chance to work for him, obviously, and just a great, great man. But, buddy, I appreciate you coming on the show. I think, you know, like I said early on, I think as strength coaches, we need to be almost like firefighters where – when everybody else is running out of the building, we want to run in, you know. And I think, you know, that's what you've done here at Austin Peay. I mean, a lot of people are escaping there. A lot of people are looking for the greener pastures and all those types of things. And I'm not saying anything about who was there before that, but not too many people run towards programs that are not performing at the highest level. And, you know, so go in there and to affect the change that you have. I mean, that's pure coaching. And like I said, it oozes out of you. You can tell the passion oozes out of you, and that you're constantly searching for solutions to improve the situation and your athletes. So it's commendable in my book, man. I appreciate you coming on the show and sharing with everybody.
Oh, man, like I said, it's an absolute pleasure and honor. You've been a great resource for me, Coach, you know, these past 3 years. And I just I'm excited for our friendship and really – you know, the mentorship, I'm learning a ton from you consistently. Thank you.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey, on Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.